Welcome to Bevington Banter, the show where we can sound like we're arguing even when we all agree. I'm Cassidy, and together with my brother Cade and dad Randy, each week we discuss a selection of news stories, topics surrounding the culture, and matters of freedom and faith. Thanks for listening. Follow and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Share it, and if you like what you hear, rate it 5 stars on Apple and Spotify.
So there's a lot in the news this week, that's for sure. But the one that kind of got my attention was, I saw it late last night, is that they are finding in all the discovery, the congressional oversight that's looking into the alleged Biden, corruption and bribe taking and all that. They are finding documents that it appears that Hunter or Joe Biden, while he was vice president, was using a pseudonym email in order to conduct business so that it wasn't, saying Joe Biden. And so they're digging deeper and trying to find more information. He used, and this was the email address, the name was Robert L. Peter, and it was at something gov, I forget. And he also,
PCI.gov.
What is it?
At PCI.gov.
Okay.
Which I don't know what that would stand for.
I don't know either. And he
also, that's going to be somebody's new Twitter handle if they talk about that on the Pat Gray.
They also,
Robert L. Peters.
Found that he used Robin, it appears that he used the name Robin Ware and also J.R.B. Ware, which the J.R.B.
which is literally Joseph, his initials?
Joseph Robinette Biden. Yeah.
Yikes.
Ware. So, I mean, that's kind of crazy. And it, way back early in the, when all this stuff started to break, there was a story where Hunter, this was found off of his laptop, that it, he had Joe Biden, listed as Pedo Pete in his address book.
I do remember that.
That is crazy.
So that clicked with me when I saw this Robert L. Peters as a pseudonym, Pedo Pete. There you go.
I would actually love if Joe Biden still was in full control of his own mind. And I would love to see the conversation between him and Hunter if he still had all his faculties. And he went to Hunter, who they found out from his stolen laptop information that he had his dad listed as Pedo Pete. I want to know what Joe Biden in his right mind would say to Hunter. What are you doing? Why would you do that? Listing him as Pedo Pete?
This is a little bit... This is the way I've always gotten the vibe from this family. It's one of those where they claim to be, family is everything and they're so close and Joe, loves Hunter and Hunter loves his dad. But at the same time, they can't stand each other. They don't know what love is. There's an allegiance, I guess, but whatever it is, it's incredibly unhealthy. I've never believed that Hunter Biden loves his dad. I think he hates his father, is incredibly resentful. I mean, you see that in some of the messages that you've had and what he's put him into. And I mean, I don't know. I could be completely wrong. But if Joe Biden went down in smoking flames, I don't think it would bother Hunter all that much.
It all fell apart when Beau died.
Yeah, I think you're right. But that's where a lot of the resentment from Hunter comes from.
Well,
I mean,
Beau
was the golden child.
Oh yeah,
I think that's why he slept with his wife.
Probably
of years of spite against his brother.
Out of spite,
quite possibly. Uh-oh. But then that doesn't say much for
Beau's
wife. It doesn't say much for Beau.
She was
a
sad and wounded woman with a broken heart.
Okay, but you don't have to be repulsive.
Yeah, you know that she was on the take from a bunch of this stuff too, right?
Yeah.
That's true.
So,
So, anyways, that was the one that really got me last night. It's like, whoa, that one really may resonate with people if they can prove that he's using, because why would you use a pseudonym? Of course, Hillary Clinton used, an unsecure server to do all her criminal business, and it didn't affect her any.
An insecure server. I don't know if I'm doing such a good job. I'm worried that I'm not keeping these secrets.
Some of this information.
I'm afraid Hillary is going to smash me with hammers.
You had a really interesting story, which I had not seen, that you mentioned just before we started recording about Alec Baldwin.
So, apparently, experts find, this is a title from an article on the Daily Wire from yesterday, but a bunch of people were talking about it. Experts find that Alec Baldwin did pull the trigger in the Rush shooting, could still face charges. Then you read the story, and this is insane to me. As much as, don't get me wrong, and this is why this should be even more impactful. I wouldn't necessarily say I'm a gun expert, but I know a lot about guns, okay? And I do not like Alec Baldwin. If he really did it and he went to jail, it would not bother me whatsoever. I don't like him. The state of New Mexico hired a couple of experts. They concluded that the trigger of the Colt 45 revolver, that is important, the type of gun, must be pulled sufficiently enough to cause the accident. Baldwin still said that he hadn't pulled the trigger. The charges were dismissed without prejudice in April. Although Alec Baldwin repeatedly denies pulling the trigger, given the test findings and observations reported here, the trigger had to be pulled or depressed sufficiently to release the fully cocked or retracted hammer of the evidence revolver. The firearms report obtained by People said, another quote, "This fatal incident was the consequence of the hammer being manually retracted to its fully rearward and cocked position, followed at some point by the pull or rearward depression of the trigger." I don't know how you can read what we're about to read in the next paragraph and say that as a gun expert, because this next part throws all that away. The report noted that, quote, "the full cock step on the hammer had been severely damaged. The top of the trigger's sear was broken off, and the bolt or cylinder stop was also broken due to the incident. But even so, there was no indication of any modification to the gun." That's insane. That absolutely would cause a gun to go off by itself. And when combined with some other things that had been said all the way back when the incident first occurred, I have another article that talks about how the gun that was in the accident was used by the crew to do target practice. Okay? So this is how they describe, in a lot of places, I find it described as a prop gun. Well, it probably wasn't a prop gun. What it probably was a two-spec original Colt single-action Army chambered in 45 long Colt. However, a lot of those guns, because the specifications of them are exactly the same as the original, the old Colt single-action Army, they require, there's a modern loading for 45 long Colt and then what's called a cowboy load. It's a lighter loaded round that is required to shoot through a lot of revolvers like this. Now, let's also combine a previously known fact that the armorer on set was young and inexperienced. Okay? She very possibly could have bought the wrong ammunition. If she bought 45 long Colt full power modern day loadings and they were shooting them out there at the range, they could have started to degrade that gun. Now, if her and the crew were out plinking, shooting ammo, because and using the wrong ammo because she didn't know what she was doing, at some point, they could have been firing that gun. All of a sudden, that gun goes off by itself while they're shooting, and they go, whoa. And they set the gun down because they're done. They're like, they panic a little bit because the gun just went off on its own, so they're done. And they leave it sitting there. That would explain why the gun was still loaded and why the gun would have gone off by itself. But to say that the gun had been used in target practice previous to this, the morning of the incident, and then say that that one single round was damaging enough to the gun to break the sear on the trigger and break the full cock position on the revolver, it's not possible that it could have been shot that many times in succession during the day earlier and then break all of a sudden in a single shot.
I think you bring up some really good points. It answered some questions that I had developing as you were going along, but it raised up a few more. It makes sense to me what you're saying, especially if they had a misfire on the range and they stopped using it at that point and it was not used again until he picked it up. Because my thought was, if you have the damage to the gun that you're saying, it would cease to work properly. So how would they have used it? How would it have worked properly with them out there firing it? The damage would have had to occur as a result of them firing it.
So one of two things could have happened.
But it certainly could have misfired because of that damage. And the other thing was, if it still had those, now tell me on this if I'm thinking right. If it had the heavier load, more grains, and I don't know what the typical grain load for a 45 is.
It wouldn't be
is.
The grain of the projectile, but it would be the amount of powder in it.
Okay. Okay. So it's got more gunpowder in it.
Correct.
Would that be because it passed all the way through the person that it killed and then wounded another person pretty badly? Is that
easily,
due to that, the... Would that have happened with
probably,
the lighter powder load?
Probably because she was shot through the abdomen and it didn't really, I don't think, struck any bone. It just did some... It probably would have gone through...
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
but
so
it,
it's a heavy...
But it probably would have gone through either way.
Okay.
Even if it was a cowboy load. But the,
and it's not hollow point,
so
right?
One
so
of two things could... Correct.
Yeah,
it would have gone...
Full metal jacket.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of two things could have happened. Either when he took the gun, they could have been shooting it, and it could have been something where you pull it back to full cock, and it sits there for a second, but it slips forward and fires just because it's worn, just because the sear had started to wear and round out. Or it could be that the sear never caught at all, and he pulled the hammer back, and as soon as you let go of the hammer, it never catches
forward.
At all. Just fly forward. Right. It just slam fires. So my guess is something, an accident happened, or a negligent discharge happened on the range because they were using the wrong ammo. And the very next shot would do the exact same thing. There's no, but the biggest thing to me is that you can claim that the gun had been shot that morning perfectly fine, and then all of a sudden you had a catastrophic failure on the sear and the hammer when it was fired one time by Alec Baldwin. There's no way.
Well, it is possible under your scenario if you had damage due to shooting
correct.
The wrong ammo through.
Yes,
it.
But then you're saying, because they're claiming that there's evidence that the trigger was pulled, but Kate is saying, no,
there's no
Baldwin's
way.
Probably telling the truth that he didn't pull the trigger.
I will say
however,
this. Don't they have it on video?
I guess they probably would. No,
I mean, they're
just,
making
was,
a movie.
But they were just framing it. It was a practice shot.
Well,
and that would have explained why Elena Hutchin was behind the camera looking at Alec Baldwin doing a shot where he was intentionally supposed to be aiming the gun down the camera.
And I was going to say, and that to me, I mean, yeah, I'm with you. I'm no fan of Alec Baldwin, but that... it wasn't time for him yet to pull the trigger. So why I can understand
correct.
That him saying, I didn't pull the trigger. Cause that's not what that framing was
right.
about. That's not what that,
why
that's not what
pull
was being
the hammer
done.
Back, though? But still we're kind of back at where we were at the beginning of this saying, okay, well, whose fault? Obviously the armorer did something wrong. Cause they didn't check it and they didn't put the right ammunition.
I
in
don't
it.
Think anyone
but
is
then you're
criminally
still
at fault.
Who did, you, the armorer?
I don't think anyone's criminally at fault. Maybe the armorer could be, you could argue
negligent
that. However,
homicide.
However,
or...
Alec Baldwin is still civilly at fault
right.
as an executive producer. That is his
yeah,
set.
And you still
he
have
hired that armorer. He needed
of,
to know what was going on the set.
Was it his responsibility to also
yes.
check the gun before he picked it up?
Correct.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have probably ever been even shooting those live rounds to begin with, even though they were in the middle of the desert, not on a movie set. And still, as an executive producer, he should be civilly liable. I just think that for an expert to claim that the trigger had to be pulled with knowing all this information is wrong.
Yeah, you're right. You're correct. And maybe you can understand, like, this is how it normally works unless it's damaged.
And this also is, this is not just creating a reasonable doubt. This is a reasonable scenario in which this could have happened. This is more proof. This is almost more proof that the gun was defective. Because how could you have shot it one moment and had a catastrophic failure the next with the exact same ammunition?
Right. If your scenario is correct, then to me, the armorer is the most culpable here. Because
I agree.
That gun misfired when they were out plinking, it should have been immediately removed from the set and not even considered ever being used.
At the very least, unloaded.
Yeah. But to say, ooh, boy, we better stop screwing around and then just put it down and wait for it to be used in the movie, that's
very possible.
The most negligent, culpable person.
So anyway, there's my thoughts from a direction that you probably would not have thought. I can't stand Alec Baldwin, but I also don't think that it's very, very possible that he did not pull the trigger.
He's the one that called his daughter, right?
Oh, that yes. Voicemail. No. That that's on. Insane.
Yeah. Fat little pig or whatever. What do you yeah. call her?
I don't remember, but it's not good. It's not good.
You should be beaten with a bag of oranges.
A what?
That's a bag of Seinfeld line.
Hey, I want to tell you something, okay? And I want to leave a message for you right now, because, again, it's 10:30 here in New York on a Wednesday, and once again, I've made an ass of myself trying to get to a phone to call you at a specific time. You've made me feel like shit, and you've made me feel like a fool over and over and over again. And this crap you pull on me with this phone situation that you would never dream of doing to your mother, and you do it to me constantly and over again. I am going to get on a plane, and I'm going to come out there for the day, and I'm going to straighten your ass out when I see you. Do you understand me?
Now, if so, that's Alec Baldwin leaving
a
message for
his
daughter. Did
you know that she was like 8?
I was going to say, I think I had heard she was like 12, but she was young.
Still, regardless.
She was still, I wouldn't talk to my, if my daughter was 50, I wouldn't talk to her that way.
That's interesting.
This is better. Is there a number?
He's a horrible person.
Is there?
What number do people call to get on the air? I mean, do we have that number?
Alec Baldwin briefly hosted a radio show
because he thought it was so easy. He had actually
at
one point.
Yes, and he thought all these people were going to call in, and no one called. And he's talking to the board operator, like, "Are there any calls?"
And he's incapable of filling dead air because he's not that smart.
Hysterical.
He doesn't have anything to talk about. Where, I mean, people think that it's really easy, and then you sit in front of the microphone and you try to come up with something to say, and you're like, oh my gosh, Rush Limbaugh is really good and Glenn Beck is really good at this. This is actually a lot more difficult. And that show lasted no time at all. He was off the air so fast.
So yesterday, Apple removed like over 3,000 podcasts of Glenn Beck's show.
I did see that.
From Apple Podcast. And then he had a bunch of people on X start getting on them, and they put back about 1,500 of them. But people then started coming, you know, to his defense, and Jeremy Boring put out something about, you know, it's wrong, whatever. And then Glenn Beck is the best currently living broadcaster, maybe the best currently living broadcaster. Like, and they're like, that's sad. They were reading on air. And then both Glenn and Stu were like, oh, that's sad. Because obviously he's talking about Rush. Yeah. And he was talking about, obviously, he wasn't the best. And yeah.
Rush Limbaugh was one of those people that made it. He was so good. He made it seem like you thought anybody could do it, that it was so easy. It's like I used to tell people in baseball when they thought, oh, I could make it in the majors, whatever. And I'd be like, you don't understand. Those guys are getting to balls, you know, like a good shortstop, and making plays, and they make it look so easy.
Yeah.
You wouldn't even get a glove on that ball.
Close to
you
touching
it.
Yeah,
yes. Exactly.
So the first Republican primary debate is next Wednesday, or I guess this coming Wednesday. And you have some things on here that are kind of related that I'm curious about. What I actually am waiting for this debate, because I think it's gonna, after this debate, I'll kind of decide, am I Vivek or DeSantis? But I'm also curious about some of the notes on here that say Asa Hutchinson is upset that he has to go to Iowa and talk to voters because he doesn't think it's Democratic.
Yeah.
What does that even mean? And then also, the thing you have here that says Jonah Goldberg doesn't think small donors should be invoked in picking candidates.
Yeah. He, because they don't know anything. And the smelly, you know, Walmart deplorables who don't really know what's going on should not be influencing and picking candidates when you have a, you know, a bunch of redneck hicks getting behind
Trump.
Literally
the point voting. Of how it's the system is set up.
I know.
It's literally set up for that reason.
I know. And at the same time, they're always screaming about democracy.
Yeah.
Asa Hutchinson. Well, we're not a democracy.
His beef was that he should not have to go to Iowa and impress the flesh with all these people to try to raise all of these individual donations in order to meet the criteria to get on the stage. That he has he has better things to be doing.
Okay. Like he should just be on the stage.
Yeah. He also is a horrible person. On the other hand, on Megyn Kelly, Doug Burgum was getting some serious love.
Really?
Yeah.
So... Jordan Peterson had Vivek Ramaswamy on his most recent podcast episode, and in the Daily Wire subscriber portion at the end, he said he was going to press him on some of the, like the attack ad that or the attack article from the New York Times or whatever. And so I was really interested in watching that part, but it had nothing to do with the things about his political stances or like an association with George Soros or voting Democrat or his like huge estate tax, like what I've seen heard about it. It was purely about like his business past. So I was kind of upset because I was hoping for to hear his direct responses to this.
I know
things.
Pat Gray said that they're going to get him on and they're going to ask him questions about that stuff. So
I want to hear his direct responses.
Right.
Yeah. Like
Doug Burgum,
like
though,
the
they were
about,
saying.
Like the 8-year-old thing, wait until they're 8. Is that what you're talking about?
What's
Did you say that too?
Do you remember the Vivek thing? That's what you're talking about, right? They're going to ask Vivek questions.
Right.
Yeah, but
yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That,
wait till they're 8.
Back during the whole don't say gay thing.
Yeah.
Oh.
Vivek had a tweet that said Republicans really need to do a better job at coming up with things that rhyme or whatever. And he said instead of don't say gay, it could have been wait until they're 8. Meaning 8 years old until you start to talk to them about sex in school.
But the way that I understood that is he was, by saying it, you hear how ridiculous it sounds.
I hope.
That's when you say that, you realize 8 years old, what in the world are you talking about?
But the reason is because the bill, the Don't Say Gay bill, it only went up to like fifth
that's
grade.
That's probably why he did that.
You had to hit third grade.
That's
you had
probably
to hit,
why he
I think
did
you
that.
Had to hit third grade.
That's 8-year-olds.
Right.
Right. So that's why he said that.
So, and that's why he said it. He was illustrating how ridiculous that is. Like it's some big crisis that we're only going to wait till they're 8 years old.
Because wait until they're 8
them.
No.
Is
what
still
I've heard,
an accurate representation of that bill.
What I've heard that I want to answer to is that he was like in support of like a over 50% estate tax
51.
Death tax.
Or 59 or something like that.
Actually.
59%
death
tax.
I want an answer to that.
Yeah. Taxes are a moral issue, and we never talk them about them that way. That's the way they should be discussed. That's a moral issue, taxes. How much is the government going to rob from you? But Doug Burgum, they were saying that Megyn Kelly characterized him as a cross between Donald Trump and John Wayne.
What?
Yeah. I mean,
wow. I don't remember when that was, but
it's when she has some of those. I forget who she had.
Well, she
on
did
the first
a big
part
thing
of her
with
podcast.
DeSantis.
Donald
she
Trump
had,
and John Wayne would not have gotten
she
along.
On?
Yeah, I don't know if they were the ruthless guys
or the
there's a,
National Review. She has them on a lot too.
Yeah,
John Wayne would not have liked Donald Trump.
No.
I don't think so.
But I think she means as far as being an outsider. He was never into politics. When he won his governor
an outsider
race.
Outsider and a gunslinger?
When he won, because he kills rattlesnakes and he had them eat. He had people eating rattlesnake at the Iowa fair and stuff.
Oh, that's.
He was not. he was not. When he ran for governor, he was like at like 10% of the polls only a couple, 5 months before the election and
that.
All this kind of stuff.
I do remember that.
And it was interesting. She was sharing stuff that I had never heard about him. All I heard was them kind of mock him on Pat Gray. So
if he's at the debate.
There's this chance to get up there and have something to say.
You had said something, they don't think it's Democrat. This is Democratic or whatever. And Cade said, we're not a democracy, which everyone always says because we're a Democratic Republic. Did you see there was a Babylon Bee article that said, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre urges everyone, we're not a banana republic.
Yeah.
We're a Democratic banana republic.
Yeah, I saw that. I have to admit, it's democracy is one of those words that's starting to trigger me every time I hear it, because I'm so sick of hearing that. And I got to thinking, I hear it all the time now. That used to not be the case. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when we didn't talk about democracy constantly in this country, because we were not a democracy. This is a planned propaganda effort to change in people's minds what we are as a nation. And it just is so aggravating. I mean, I just want to start to scream like every time I hear somebody talk about democracy.
Remember when it was all they are changing Democratic America. Socialist? Remember back when Bernie was running against Hillary Clinton and he described himself as a democratic socialist? The fact that you can have socialism in a democracy, which by the way is true, that just shows you right there that pure democracy is garbage.
Well, I was going to say,
because it can be combined with socialism.
Right,
it's possible.
Right. If,
so
if
democracy in and of itself,
if the masses vote
no
for being a socialist country, then you can do it.
Yeah, it's no great moral thing to say democracy if it can successfully be combined with socialism. Then it's democracy is just a type of voting, but how you scale it is.
And not only that,
that's the thing, is the way that we use democratic principles in the United States is not a pure democracy.
Right.
It's
right.
Scaled the way it's scaled for a reason. It's basic. It's localized democracies.
Well, here's why,
you know, representing themselves on a national level.
Here's why they want to change our thinking, and so that Americans see themselves as a democracy, and is of great value, because I've heard this put out in studies that show that, you know, if you can get 8% of the people to basically rise up, go out, cause trouble, protest, riot.
That was that guy in Israel who
yeah,
said that.
Exactly. Is enough to change the government in power will collapse. They will have to give in to the demands of the people. So you only need 8%. So in the world that we live in today, with propaganda and misinformation and the control of the media and social media and restricting speech and all that, it's very easy to propagandize 8% of the people or a little more to respond in a way that will make a government collapse. If it's just running on the sense of a democracy. Does that make sense? I mean,
yes.
We're so propagandized today, it's crazy. And it's only going to get worse with the advent of more and more, you know, AI and control of media and social media. I did see that for the first time, the number of people watching, consuming content went under 50% for those consuming network television. You know, most content being consumed has always been via network television. Their audience was massively bigger. And for the first time, it's like it's now under 50%.
I would say that podcasts and most social media, even like YouTube shows and stuff like that, is definitely dominated by conservatives. It's why up until like Rush started, we were talking about him earlier, Democrats really dominated the talk radio. It doesn't feel like to me that Democrats' left-leaning ideology ever really dominated the podcast realm.
No.
What,
right.
And that's why
they hate it. Did they start at the very beginning, or
what?
I think when I even think of what left wing, like Pod Save America, is like the first thing.
Yeah,
like, they're pretty big.
The Young Turks,
yeah, that's about
on YouTube,
the Young Turks, maybe.
And their
yeah.
podcast. But they've definitely fallen behind. Oh, I can name half a dozen shows that passed up something like the Young Turks, even though they have, you know, 5 million subscribers on YouTube. They were huge at one, and compared to everybody else, they were huge. And then overnight, they just got crushed. There, I can name half a dozen people that have more than that now. Michael Knowles almost has that much. Let alone Bongino and Crowder and Shapiro.
You throw in though like a Joe Rogan. Obviously, he's the monster. But he, you can't really label him. I mean, ideologically, he's still more of a classic liberal.
Yeah, he's legitimately not a leftist. Okay.
Adam Carolla, though, they say he's like the godfather of the podcast. What kind of listenership does he have?
Yeah, I've heard that too. I don't know, but if you go to on Apple Podcasts right now, go to the top charts and go to news, you do get the first few are left wing, but they're probably shorter too, like The Daily from New York Times, Up First from NPR. And then an MSNBC.
Yeah, those are
MSNBC
literally like 10-minute daily
podcast,
shows.
Yeah, on prosecuting Donald Trump. But then you go to then Ben Shapiro. Then you do have Pod Save America, so left again. But then you go in all in a row. Glenn Beck, Dan Bongino, Megyn Kelly. I don't know what Andy Staples is. Matt Walsh, Morning Wire. So, yeah.
You know,
and
my thing
why,
with... Go ahead.
I don't know what
my
to
thing
do
with Megyn Kelly is... She is such an excellent interviewer. I love to listen to it, but it's only good if she has people that I'm interested in hearing, because she's not a Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh when it comes to just talking into the microphone.
Correct. Yeah, she doesn't monologue the same way. Or have a person that she's...
The only thing I say is Bongino is his content, because he is horrible.
Right, he's not.
He's terrible.
Glenn Beck is good, though, and I would agree with what... I would probably agree with what Jeremy Boring said, that, you know, after Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck is now the best, if just like straight broadcasters, for radio.
Yeah.
Because even those Daily Wire guys aren't on radio, so you can't even include them, but.
Right. I love to listen to Stu talk. I'm just fascinated to hear him speak.
Why?
He speaks so well, so clear, so... I can just see him forming his words, every word that comes out of his mouth.
I can't remember what Stu's real name is, but it's not Stu.
Stuart?
No, it's not. It's something different. It's very similar. It might be like Steve or something, like Steven. But Glenn Beck called him Stu one time when he first started working for him. And
Steve.
He didn't correct him. He never corrected him. And so he let him call him Stu for a long time. And then one day he finally admitted to him that his name was Steve. And Glenn Beck was like, no, it's not. It's Stu. And that's in his name forever. If you ask Stu Bergier's mother about that, she's furious.
Well,
oh, my goodness. His name is Steve.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Megyn Kelly had him on a while back, and she introduced him as Stu Bergier.
That's because that's what everybody knows him as. Glenn Beck changed his name on accident.
Okay, Antoine.
People don't even know this is his name.
We're just going to start calling you Antoine. Maybe we can change your name.
No.
That's what you said you wanted. That's what you wanted your name to be when you were little.
Mr. Lindemann.
Yeah, when I was like 8.
Called me Antoine in junior high.
Really?
In junior high science, because I wore... No, he would call me Antonio. Because
you wore... Oh, okay.
Because I wore my Antonio Pittman jersey. Okay, did you hear... Janet Yellen did an interview with CNN, and they're asking her about questions about the economy and inflation, and she's saying how people are... Even though people are saying, you know, largely that the state of the economy isn't well, she stated something like... 70-something percent, I think it was, 75% of Americans believe the economy is in poor condition. But then she says 63% of people, and 63% of people disapprove how Biden is handling the economy. That's what they asked her. Like, they brought this up in the question. And she responded by saying that over 70% of Americans say they're very comfortable with their financial situations.
What?
And then talking about how Bidenomics is so great. And then they quoted on, I think it was Glenn Beck, a poll that literally said the opposite, that it was whatever percentage she said, like over 70% were comfortable. It was, that many people were actually like saying they were stressed and feeling like financially insecure. And then she goes on later in the same interview to tell this story about how she recently went to China with this group and she accidentally ate magic mushrooms. She like ate a bunch of them. She's like, but I didn't have any hallucinogenic effects. But it's like this anecdote. And I'm like, what the heck?
I had them right now before I came on set.
If it did not have an effect on you, then it was not a magic mushroom.
I went with this large group of people, and the person who had arranged our dinner did the ordering. There was a delicious mushroom dish. I was not aware that these mushrooms had hallucinogenic properties. I learned that later. I can tell you that
later,
none
like
of us
in your when you were sleeping and having visions,
mushrooms.
Or
well, I was read that if the mushrooms are cooked properly, which I'm sure they were at this very good restaurant, that they have no impact. But all of us enjoyed the mushrooms, the restaurant, and none of us felt any ill effects from having eaten them.
Okay, all I'm saying is that, yes, if she really half believes the things that she said about the economy and how people feel, then she is definitely tripping on shrooms.
Well, no, I agree with that. But the flip of that is then, so if there were no hallucinogenic effects, you're just a moron.
Because the stuff you're saying is tripping.
She truly believes it. Yeah.
You had the perfect out. You could have said, I'm sorry, I was under the influence of hallucinogenics.
Not only that, as a gnome, you know your mushrooms.
That's
right?
True. They're mushroom experts. Gosh.
Should we retweet
the gnome?
Photoshop.
She's a gnome.
She's a gnome. She looks like a gnome. You put a pointed hat on her head and she's the roaming gnome.
She lives in a mushroom.
Yes.
It's her fungal abode. Welcome to my fungal abode, the psilocybin I reside in.
Taking the internet by storm.
Yeah. You hear terms all the time about things breaking the internet and stuff. If there's something that broke the internet, then it's like, if that were possible, this song is it. This has been out now about a week. It's a song released by a guy named Oliver Anthony, and the title is Rich Men North of Richmond. And this guy had like 500 viewers maybe or followers on like YouTube. He had posted maybe like 10 songs or so, all shot on his iPhone. I mean, he was, you know, doing nothing. And apparently, you know, he had been working factory, and I think he may be doing something a little bit different now. But some of his songs I listened to, they talk about, you know, getting drunk, smoking a bowl, just, you know, kind of living that life, getting just barely getting by. And I watched a 9-minute video of him introducing himself. He's sitting in his truck. It's kind of dark. But he said, he goes, you know, I even used to make fun. I was basically an atheist, made fun of the Sky Daddy and all this kind of stuff. But about a month before this song was, hit, he just said that he cried out to God and said, I'll stop drinking. You know, you got to get me out of this if you'll help me pursue my dream. Because he had started writing and singing in 2021. And 30 days after falling on his knees in tears and asking God to help him, this thing hit. And it has absolutely gone ookie palookie. I mean, it's gone nuts.
Not only this song, but I heard like, you know, 4 of his songs.
Yeah,
were
in the top 10 on Spotify or something at one point.
Not including being on social media, not including being played on shows or being played on iTunes or Spotify, just the original video on Radio West Virginia's YouTube channel, which only has 243,000 subscribers, which I also guarantee went up when this came out.
Right.
Just the original video has 18 million views in 8 days, and that is not even counting all of the other places people have heard it.
Right. So that's what I thought. All these other places that you've heard it has been played in, because I've watched hours of people's like first reaction to the video. It's fascinating. I love the black guys hearing this guy sing and react to it. Some of them are hilarious. How many millions and millions and millions of views it's had. It did hit number one on like Spotify or iTunes, I forget which, like in the first, you know, then the first couple of days. And everything
is still currently number one in the top 100 in the USA on Apple Music. And that's of all genres, all music together. And
it's so he had everything, like I said, he had done was only like on his iPhone. And so this Radio West Virginia, I guess, must have seen some of his iPhone posts. And they offered, let's come out and record this song. So they actually record it, but it's still nothing. They're just shooting it. He's got a microphone. He's got his guitar. He's standing out in but in his backyard or something. There's a deer stand behind him. There's a couple of dogs laying on the ground, and he sings the song, and it's just gone absolutely nuts. I don't know if people haven't heard it, we'll put the link in. It's called, Rich Men North of Richmond by Oliver Anthony. Do we want to play the first little bit of it?
Yeah.
It's a damn shame what the world's gotten to for people like me, people like you. Wish I could just wake up and it not be true, but it is. Oh, it is living in the new. With an whole soul, these rich men north of Richmond, Lord knows it all, just wanna have total control, wanna know what you think, wanna know what you do, and they don't think you know, but I know that you do, cause your dollar ain't shit, and it's taxed to no end, cause the rich men north of Richmond.
I want to like to amend my statement and say not only is it number one in the U.S. top chart, it's number one in the global top 100.
You know, that's interesting because I saw a number of these people, first reactors. They were from other countries, South Africa, Canada, Britain. And then one is like a Latino reacts, you know. People said, you know, I can relate to it here. And so the theme is that, you know, obviously, the rich men north of Richmond, he's talking about Washington, D.C., and the oligarchs, because he's talking about north of Richmond, Virginia, and he's from Farmville, Virginia, is Washington, D.C. So he's talking about the politicians. He's talking about the Uniparty, you know, and all that. We now have oligarchs in our country. He goes on and sings a line about he wishes politicians would be concerned about miners, not just miners on an island. So, and that's the one I love to watch. The people that get what he's saying, I love to watch their reactions. They're like, oh, no, he didn't just go there. But, you know, talking about our working, taking care of a working class people who are busting their humps. They never get ahead. They're taxed to no end. And they work dangerous, hard jobs. And these politicians and these oligarchs, they're chasing around miners, you know, for sex on Epstein Island. That's where their focus is. That's what they care about. People don't realize how many people like him there are in our country. I mean, we see it more because we live in a rural setting, but people in the city certainly don't. But here's the thing that made me think. When Rush Limbaugh, before he became big, he took a break from his radio career, and he worked for the Kansas City Royals in like marketing and promotion and that stuff. And he said, one thing I always was learned and had to remember when marketing baseball and who the people are and who we were trying to reach. Listen to this fact. This is crazy. More people go bowling every week than go to a major league baseball game in a week. That's who America is.
Say that again, because that
more people go bowling every week, at least when he was doing this, than attend a major league baseball game. So you're talking how many major league teams are there?
32.
So you're talking 16.
I can never remember which sport is
16.
Which.
Yeah. Okay, so for 16 games between 32 teams, and they're playing 5 and 6 times a week. And yep. They're filling up stadiums. There are more people go bowling every week than attending all those games. That's who America is.
This guy, Oliver Anthony, he also is saying no. He's been invited on a lot of shows. And obviously, conservative, especially, I would say media-wise, conservatives are very interested in him. He's saying no to all his shows because he doesn't want to be associated. Or he hasn't stated what his politics are, what way he votes, whatever. You might make assumptions, but whatever. I think that's smart for him because he wouldn't, you don't automatically alienate half, you know. But the other thing, and because this song doesn't just appeal to conservatives, and I think I heard someone making the point of, we do have, when conservatives just jump on something like this, or jump on a movie or jump on a show and say, oh, that's a conservative show, that's a conservative movie, that's a conservative song, then automatically you have this huge portion of people who just don't
reject
even listen to it. Whereas if you said, this is a song about
America.
America right now and living in America, and then anyone can listen to it with common sense, say, yeah, I feel that.
I heard, you know, I heard all these, Democrats and liberals, they get up and go to the work too, and they work hard in some of those jobs and don't get ahead. I mean, I watched all kinds of people, one smoking their blunt on their the reaction video and going, yeah. I mean, because everybody, every working person, regardless, gets this. I heard guys were commenting saying, "Hey, you know, this is so true." They go, "I'm working 40 hours. I'm putting in my overtime. I'm trying to, you know, get something for my family." And you think you're going to get ahead, and you get your paycheck, and they've taken $600 out of your paycheck. I can remember when $600 in a paycheck, that was a good paycheck, not to have that much taken out of it. I mean, I wanted to, and I've put together really a whole message on this song, and looked up so much information, because the Bible addresses these kinds of things. James 5, 4 through 6 says, look, the wages you failed to pay the workmen who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered innocent men who were not opposing you. I mean, and, you know, he reads from Psalm 37. I heard him reading beginning at one show he was doing. And he talks about that, the rich and the wicked. And that's the time that we live in. And everybody sees it.
Is that Psalm about, like, why do the rich wicked get by?
It's part of it. That's part of it.
Also, you could find that in Ecclesiastes. Right. So he talks about that.
Yeah, exactly. But I looked up a bunch of numbers. Listen to some of this stuff. I remember Amazon has taken a lot of heat. Amazon's total market valuation is $1.46 trillion. They have had a lot of lawsuits where bad working conditions. They made it a public a corporate policy. Bezos believed that newer workers worked better and all this. They would let people go every 3 years. That was kind of their standard policy. You work there 3 years and you're just dismissed. To bring in new workers, it keeps wages low. It keeps people motivated. I mean, that is just wrong.
I'm currently reading The Jungle about the packing houses in Chicago way back when all the immigrants were doing it. And that book literally sparked like reform and all this investigation. Yes. And it sounds like the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, people were, you know, people urinating in bottles because they got to meet quota. Yeah. They can't go take a bathroom
break. Sounds like the same thing.
You know, you got Amazon.
Amazon drivers do that now.
Yeah, I know. So here, this was an interesting dude. Harvard University, they have an endowment of $53 billion. So every person that attends Harvard for the rest of time could go there for free. And they're telling their graduate assistants, who are like teaching assistants and stuff, oh, you go on food stamps. It's insane. It's insane. And I think I've shared this before. 50 plus years ago, the guys that growing up in this community that were working factory were making between a lot, if they'd been there a while, they're making between $20 and $30 an hour. And today, guys are making 12, 13, maybe 15. I mean, 50 years down the road, they had all those guys, they had boats, they had campers, or else maybe they had a cottage at the lake. These are just factory workers. I mean, because they were making real money. Now, the unions kind of screw that up. Yeah, they always want more money and less production. So, yeah, there's a happy medium. But there's something wrong with where the guys were making $25 an hour 50 years ago, and now they're making 12. I mean, it's
when the cost of living has, you know, skyrocketed in that time, too.
And then on top of that, I read this. This was in the early, very beginning of the shutdown of the pandemic. This is off of a site called In These Times website from May 2020. According to a recent report from the Institute of Policy Studies, America's billionaires saw their wealth shoot up $282 billion in just 23 days as the country was sheltered and locked down. Overall, U.S. billionaire wealth grew nearly 10%. At the same time, over 20 million people filed unemployment. And by April 10, it had passed their wealth growth, $3.2 trillion. Just this massive wealth transfer that was taking place. And it goes on. I won't read all of it. But Bezos increased by $24 billion in the first months of the shutdown. It goes on. It talks about how the small business, mass death overtook. Blah, blah, blah. Private healthcare companies have seen major gains boosting their fortunes of healthcare billionaires, just as an estimated 9 million Americans were booted off their employers' healthcare plans. So the companies, you know, they're making big money, and yet people are losing their healthcare. I mean, it's... So this thing resonates with so many people. I mean, this is a song. I heard people going, man, this is a song of revolution. And it could be because so many people relate to it. And they relate to it.
Then Ramaswamy should pick it up since he is about revolution.
You know what? When I heard the first time I heard this song, I immediately started praying for this Oliver Anthony not to let the politics, you know, yes, him be co-opted. And I thought to myself, Stick to the culture. Don't make it political.
Yeah, he'll have more of an impact if he doesn't let politics get him.
Not only that, he's got a crazy voice. It's a good voice. It's not, you know, it's not melodic, whatever. It's just unique. And so it really grabs people. A lot of people
country, it's very...
Yeah, when they first hear it, they have to go back and listen again. They go, I was so grabbed by his voice. I didn't hear what
country,
he said.
It's not like pop country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No comment, Cade? Anyways, I wanted to preach this. No, I wanted to preach a sermon based around this because... Huh?
I said, no, I'm just mad.
It does. It makes me mad and it makes me sad at the same time. And here's my thing. I wanted to do a sermon based on this and bring all this scripture into this. What he's talking about is scriptural, and God is not for it. And I, you know, mom was like, "You're not going to preach a sermon on this, are you?"
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I absolutely believe this. Do you think God is more upset by the way people are being treated or the word, you know, the S word showing up in a song? Which do you think bothers him more?
Which is only bad because we've made it bad. Like,
I think he is infinitely more unhappy with the way people are being treated than just using a slang for
quote
fecal
unquote
matter.
Bad words are only bad words because we've given them that kind of
right. So I
know,
it wouldn't bother me a bit to play this song in church, but I know a lot of people might become apoplectic.
I've heard you say the word bitching from the pulpit.
Yep. So. I didn't call somebody a bitch.
No.
Unless I was referring to a dog.
If Jesus came back on a Friday, you'd all be bitching that you didn't get back on Monday because you had to work the whole week.
Did I say that?
I will never forget that. I swear that happened. I will never forget it.
I've heard it.
I've certainly said that, you know, if we had a special guest speaker and it was Jesus on a Monday or a Tuesday or something, you wouldn't come. You'd only come if he was here on Sunday morning. Right? Am I right?
Yeah, I've heard you say that too. I remember that.
So if you don't like conviction, don't go to Ohio City Community Church of God.
My pastor in San Diego, when I first worked for in ministry, told me, he said, you're never going to be able to pastor a church of more than 25 people. He said, because you just, the way that you teach the Bible, he goes, it just makes people too accountable and they don't want that.
He said, right?
No.
You also state, though, like, you do say the hard things, but you also, it's not like you say you're perfect and do it all right.
No.
So you're not like you're putting expectations on people. They have to be perfect either.
What he would say is, you're gonna only be able to have a church of 25 people. And they say, they'll be the most 25 most committed people you've ever seen, but that's all you're going to, and that's not true either, but anyways.
Yeah, neither of those two things are true.
I mean, I was banned from preaching certain sermons, so he was a little worried about me, I guess.
It included that S word you were talking about in the title.
It did. Yep.
Leave your.
Well, I changed it to stuff. Leave your stuff outside.
And he did preach it. He just changed the word.
It took me, excrement. 20 plus years to be able to preach it. I didn't preach it when I was in San Diego.
The literal. What is the actual word that's in the verse for it?
It would depend on the translation that you.
You know, leave your excrement or something.
I think it does. There is a version that uses the word excrement. I think.
There you go.
So every day the world gets a little bit more infuriating and Dad's closer to letting me preach my sermon titled A Time to Kill, a biblical justification for self-defense.
Oh, I thought it was the anti-pedophile.
Operation Millstone?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So, I really don't know how much of this conversation to keep it.
One of these things, one of the references he brings up to about the social welfare system he addresses in his song as well. But, you know, the thing that drives me crazy about
that. He says something about it's fat. The
Well, he says you got the obese milking welfare.
Obese, yeah.
That's the line. Obese milking welfare.
He says if you're 5 foot three and you're 300 pounds, then taxes should not pay for your bag of fudge rounds.
Yeah. Not only there, I'm going to move in. They're feeding us garbage food, killing us.
Yes.
And then he talks about the way young men in this world now are just being beaten down, and you have, you know, the epidemic of their suicide numbers are astronomically higher than any other group. So, but my thing is caring for people is a absolute biblical concept. There's nothing wrong with helping people, giving people food, money, support, opportunities, all those things that we think of like our welfare. The problem is that this big centralized government is incapable of being able to do it well. It just can't happen. So,
yet at the same time, the destruction of our communities has taken away, because in Israel, you know, it's your neighbors, your brother, the people that are by you are going to support, like take you in and care for you.
Right. Well, the government running the social welfare system is destructive to communities. Churches and other organizations within a community doing it builds a community.
Yes. Which is the same reason that this ties into what just happened in Hawaii. One, this is Glenn Beck's been talking about this week, is he doesn't want the government to be the ones coming in and assisting in these situations. However, our government is, and what they are giving is a whopping $700 per household. That is nothing.
That's insane. They were giving us $1,200 during COVID to do nothing.
What they have given Ukraine is the equivalent of $2,000 a person.
Right, $8,000 per household equivalent in Ukraine. And that's based on a $76.8 million or billion-dollar amount, which we know is probably more than triple that amount we've given them.
Right. And they're giving these people in Hawaii $700 per household.
Did you hear that?
And so Glenn is challenging his audience and people to, through Mercury One, to give a total that is higher than the number. He's like, I want to beat the government. Let's give
more.
Yeah,
I'm not even sure that the number that the federal government's giving, is it even $2 million to all of the
So it was 1.8. And then now with what FEMA has kicked in, it is 2.3, I think.
That's the total assistance they've given to all the people that have lost their homes in Maui.
Lost everything.
You heard that it's estimated that the average increase families spend per month because of inflation is $709.
Yeah. In the last 2 years, their average monthly expenses, for 1 month, is a $709 increase per month.
And now on top of this, they want to legally bar real estate companies, agents, whatever, from coming in and offering to sell, if you want to sell your house.
Yeah, because the state wants to buy it. The state of Hawaii is trying to buy their
land.
Adding
to the conspiracy on this fire, that the new addition to the conspiracy is that it was because of a land grab, and they want to make Hawaii, fifteen-minute cities.
Yeah, like this futuristic, modern-day paradise, 15-minute city kind of thing. But they couldn't,
smart city,
because there were too many historical elements throughout the area. Well, they all burned down.
Now, they do have evidence, like video evidence, that they think this was now caused by power lines that got blown over. But you could also go into this whole thing of why the power, like, why that happened.
Why was the water shut off?
The infrastructure was.
Yeah, they didn't have the water.
Because it was run on the power grid.
Why didn't the sirens, why didn't their crazy warning system they have in Hawaii, one of the most advanced ever, not work?
And there's not a lot of roads, so people couldn't get out. Well, that's why they started jumping in the water.
There's reports of law enforcement blocking the roads.
Right, and not letting
in some areas and not letting people out.
Yeah.
In that
I heard a guy saying that. He goes, the cop was standing there and they wouldn't let the traffic go and let people flee the area in their cars. So
you know what else burned in the fires?
So all that to say, the government definitely can't handle social welfare. What else burned in the fires?
The municipal building that had Barack Obama's birth certificate in it.